Alright, I'm doing a report about preaching in Colombia. Here's an important question. Raise your hand if you know how to spell Colombia. Look, you look like you don't know. Spell Colombia.
Wrong!
First thing you gotta know about Colombia, it's not Colombia, it's Colombia. It's with an O. C-O-L-O-M-B-I-A. So they'll correct you on that one. So I've been blessed to make multiple trips to Latin American countries. I've done a month in Guatemala in 2015, 1 month in 2016, then 2017 did a quick trip to Nicaragua and to Honduras. The first two trips to Guatemala, I went by myself, just did my own thing there, met people in Nicaragua and Honduras. I went along with some guys who had already had like a preacher trip plan. I kind of just accompanied them and went along with the routine, visited a bunch of churches. Colombia is a little bit of a mixture. I decided to go by myself, but I had people there from the country arrange things for me and did that. So just going to share some of that with you. I think we're doing question answer too. So we're done at 10, right?
An hour. You'll go over.
Okay. All right, but hopefully I get through this so we can do some question answer. That might be better than anything I'd have to say anyways. But we'll go ahead and get into it. Some things about Colombia. This is where Colombia is, right? So South America. By the way, with North America here, you've got Mexico is North America. Then you've got Central America here, and then South America is all this. So don't forget that Mexico is part of some of our North American friends, just FYI. The government in Colombia is now democracy. It's interesting. You find some of the same liberal versus democratic liberal versus conservative issues. I don't know why it happens this way, but three times I've made trips to Latin American countries. It's been during the election season, twice in Guatemala and once in Colombia. So, you know, you get a nice little sampling of what's going on there, and you realize, next time our election comes around, we can just take it a little bit easy because everybody's election is terrible everywhere. So, democracy. Population, you got about 48 million people. It's interesting, it went from like 4 million to 48 million since like the 1930s. So it's been a pretty big population boom. So very populous, the third most populous country in all of Latin America, following Brazil and then Mexico. Majority of the population runs through the Andes Mountains here and then by the coast. And so, like you have in the States, you got different kind of peoples. You got southerners and you got northerners and midwesterners and stuff. Colombians, you've got that. You've got the high altitude folk, and then you've got the coastal folk, and they've got names for each other, and they make fun of each other for being different than the other. My first connection to Colombia is actually the city here, Barranquilla. I was at home, and someone knocked on my door, and it was a young lady who was working for Children International, trying to find people to sponsor. It's one of those sponsorship programs that you pay monthly to, you know, provide aid for a particular child, and then you correspond through letters. So I actually have two little girls, like 6 and 7, in Barranquilla. So I'm hoping to be able to go back there a different day. But this trip, I went to Bogota, which is the capital. We've already said that. Oh, this is interesting. So you've got this whole lowland here, which is very, very jungly area. This makes up, so 54% of the land makes up 6% of the population. So everybody's like Canada, right? You're all piled up in a single place and the rest is not. Current condition in Colombia is it was pretty bad for a while through the 60s and then escalating in the 90s. There was a lot of internal conflict. Not one specific civil war, but really multiple civil wars between crime syndicates and governments and revolutionaries. And so it was a pretty big mess. Colombia had a pretty bad name for a while. You know, when you hear Colombia, the next word you think is cartel, right? But fortunately, that's not really the situation anymore. Since 2005, there's been, this is all Wikipedia, by the way. Since 2005, there's been significant improvements to just the stability and things. And that's certainly what I experienced when I was there. It's the most affluent Latin American country I've been to. And granted, I was in capital city and some other surrounding places. So there'd be other places, you know, less well off. But compared to several Central American countries, the government is much less corrupt. There's much more of an even distribution of wealth and things like that. For whatever this is worth and whatever this means, it's ranked third in the Happy Planet Index. So it's a happy place. I'm going to go to Colombia and have a good time there. Religion, pretty typical. A lot of Catholic, right? Then you've got Protestantism, followed by atheism, and then believe in God, but you're not religious, and then crazy Christians, and then other. But in any country where you've got majority Catholic, you've got 35% say that they don't practice their faith. And, you know, so you have a lot of God-believing people, but a lot of people are just like, they're doing their own thing. Not necessarily super duper interesting. The real reason to be a preacher and to do trips is to eat food. Colombia being, you know, a very tropical climate and things, had the largest variety of fruits I've ever seen in my life. This is all from one little bodega, like on the street. Family that was taking care of me, which I'll mention them in a little bit, they just took me to the market, and I didn't recognize any of it. Just started grabbing every single thing, brought it home, and they kind of went through that. So granadilla, that's passion fruit, so we know that one. This stuff, pitaya, that's really good, but apparently you can only eat a little bit because it makes you constipate. So they warned me, I only had one half at a time. A lot of these are good for juices and things. That's another good reason to travel is, especially traveling south, is you can get some amazing juice for cheap. So that's that. This is very special Colombian plate, bandeja paisa, which is like, bandeja's basket, and paisa is, it's like someone from that part of Colombia, like someone who's paisana is like Colombian in that particular region. So it's basically this special food basket from that place. And as you can see, it's an obscene amount of food. This is like $4, right? So if you ever Colombian restaurant, ask for bandeja paisa, they'll charge you like $13, but it'll still be good. And then, that's a lot of food too. Fortunately, that was not just for me, that was a big community thing. Food's good. Oh, yeah. And here, I don't know if you guys can tell what I'm eating here.
Magic beans.
Huh?
Magic beans.
Magic beans. They were magical, but they weren't beans. Those would be roasted ants. which, you know, Colombian native. He was really happy to see somebody selling ants on the street. He bought them and obliged me to eat them. If you're going to eat a bug, I recommend starting with ants. It's not the worst thing I've ever had. So, so this is the city of Bogota. This is the capital city. As you can see, wham, it's pretty big, pretty big. I'm up on a big mountainside. The cool thing about this city is it is surrounded by mountains, so it's just weird to see super metropolis and mountains all in the same spot. It's about 8 million people, so we're talking the same population as New York. It's going to be more spread out because it's not quite as, you know, this is New York. And again, a very affluent for a Latin American city what I've been accustomed to. Family I was staying with lived in a very nice area, nice accommodations and things. This is also cool. So the city is seated in this high elevation plateau. You got mountains, and then they plateau, and the city's on top of this plateau. And so, you know, you're in Colombia, and you're pretty near the equator, but it's always like 60 and 70 degrees year round. I was looking, and like record highs are like 83 and stuff like that. And that's every single month at the same record high and same record low. So it's just the same weather all the time, and it's always nice. But Colombians are crazy. Always talk about how cold it is. They're always freezing at night. Like, I say tanto frío. But, like, they've lived there their whole life. I don't know what happened, like, gotten used to the climate when it's every single day. But whatever that's worth. So that's nice. If you travel very far at all, it'll get instantly hot because you'll drop in elevation, and then you'll begin to freeze. So my first trip to Colombia, I stayed with this family here. Some of you guys have been to Jersey Camp, right? Might recognize some of these little dudes. Little dudes being the kids, not the adults. We actually have a lot of young people from Colombia who have come to Jersey Camp. And so when I went, did one of my trips, I was actually been like, oh, you. A lot of people there. Actually, a girl went to FC with. She was there too, but. So, and so Mateo, he was in my cabin, and Juanito, he was a Baisler kid. And actually, Ben and Emily, y'all went your honeymoon and chill with them some too, right?
Yeah,
cool. Some very nice places. Anyways, but he was in my cabin, and he said, you know, I would like you to come to my country, right? I was like, okay, I want to come to your country. And then his parents picked him up because they were in the States. I met Orlando here. I said, I want to come to your country. And so we corresponded, and he arranged for me to spend a week and change there. This is a very unique Latin American family because they are organized and orderly and on time. They gave me like an actual itinerary and everything. It was bizarre. And they're like, listen, we're not like other Colombians. So I really appreciated that. So I could really plan ahead and knew exactly what I was getting into each day. But I tell you, this family here is an incredible family. Again, my first trip, most time I spent was with them. And probably the best part about the trip was being with them, how helpful and welcoming they were to me. I didn't really know them at all, but definitely by the end of the week, really came to appreciate them. These are people that I really like to live near. And really, when you start thinking about, like, would you want to move to another country, you look for people like this, and you move where they are. That way you've got someone there that, you know, you can take care of you, that you can really relate to. A lot of spiritual maturity and things, and so... They have since left Bogota, and now they are in Papa something. Papa Hupa, I don't know, I forget. So different part of Colombia, but now I gotta go there. I preached a couple times in their home congregation that they started some years ago, a small group, but did a series on the book of Matthew there. Taught there a couple times, and then went back to that. Another church is El Barrio Rincón, and El Barrio Rincón is that's a neighborhood in Colombia, or in Bogota. And this neighborhood really reminded me of the Bronx, and so felt pretty at home there. This congregation is one of the bigger congregations in Colombia. Probably not quite 100 people, but pushing it, and really cool group. They meet Sundays in the morning. You know, a couple lessons, and then the evening. And then they meet Wednesdays, but then they also meet Saturdays. Every Saturday they have a singing followed by two lessons. So you're talking about a three-hour session every single Saturday, which is really kind of a big sacrifice to just by default. No Saturdays ever, because they've got devoted so much time to the services there. So that's a big deal. Also, when they do their singing, they do like yoga beforehand to like stretch their like vocal cords and things, and so that really threw me off. Didn't know what was going on there. And then when we started singing, I don't think the yoga helped. But Colombia actually did see people who are trying harder to get more technical aspects of the music right. But again, we got a couple more years to get there. So this trip, I just did a series of lessons on great Bible texts, which is a theme about as generic as what Roger Polanco would come up with. But as you see, James, chapter 4, first 7 verses there. But that was really helpful. Met a lot of good people there. Two preachers there, one guy named Henry and another guy named David. They're brothers, and so they're very evangelistic, very hardworking, have had a lot to do with the growth in that congregation. The second trip of the... I'll tell you about. I actually got to stay with these guys instead. And this last year, we were at our church, West Fallon congregation, was able to support them to go to DR. Even though our church is predominantly Dominican, apparently we don't want to bother with it, so we'll pay other Hispanics to go to DR for us. One thing that's helpful is that in the DR, there's lots of churches of Christ, but very institutional and those kinds of leanings. And these brethren are maybe a little bit more focused on some of those issues and prepared to deal with some of those issues than even myself. And so they already had a lot of open doors, a lot of communications with churches, talking about these things, so we supported them to go over and do that. They received support from other people as well. And visited like 7-8 congregations and kind of hammered out some of those things, and hopefully some good was done with that. That's another good thing about doing trips, is you make connections and you get... your other connections connected and so forth, and your world gets a lot bigger. And you get overwhelmed because you have a lot of people telling you that you need to come back this year, but you just can't do it. Let's see. I went to another church, Los Libertadores. I don't have a picture of that, but I don't have a picture of this either. But this young man, Andres, who is he David's son? He's related. He's a nephew or something to either Henry or David. I forget. But young man, probably 25 now, and he was actually a supported evangelist. Really cool guy, cool music taste and stuff. But he took me over to this church, and I got to know him better. It was cool to actually, do youngish, at least, evangelist, do that thing together. So that was pretty cool. Then we went to a small town called Sopó. This is about 45 minutes outside of Bogotá. And, man, it's a small little paradise. It's a small little town, and just, very cute, very quaint. Everything is, good condition and pretty in the end. Just big, beautiful hillsides and stuff. And, Sorios, they are friends with this couple here. This guy here is, man, they are eccentric, straight up. Like, they're just, like, Harry Potter eccentric kind of people. He's an artist, and he's the kind of guy you say, yep, makes sense. You're an artist. He's got paintings everywhere and stuff. So, very cool people, very fun. Had dinner with them, and then we went to the congregation. I preached there. I did that my first and second trip. Some more connections there, which was cool. So that was my first trip. I should say second trip, probably. So after my first trip, some of the brethren in El Barrio Rincón were talking about how they were planning to do a young people's camp. He's like, you should do it back in the day, and the kind of thing y'all do in the States, and so we want to do a camp. So he was asking if I would be able to be a part of it. And so even though I had been there that 1 month, that 1 week in February, I agreed to come back in June, I believe it was, and spend another week in change there to do the weekend camp with them. And then spend another couple of days just going around the city and doing things. This is Andres, who I told you about a second ago. And this is a Bible class we did. They do a weekly Bible class. And these guys' apartment here, this couple here, whose names are escaping me at the moment. So that's the kind of situation. You get there, and you land, you get there, you show up, and they say, all right, we're coming to this house. And they sit down, and they say, okay, what are you going to teach us? And I go, great. And when it's not your first language, it's that much more exciting to come up with something on the spot. But that was a good class there. Enjoyed the time with them. This trip was pretty cool because it wasn't just being able to go visit other churches. In fact, it was much less of that. It was a lot more of these individuals saying, hey, I've got these contacts I've been working with. Hey, do a thing with them or something, right? So I went with Andres the next day, who had been studying with this couple. This couple here, they own a gym. So we went to the gym and studied with them in the office. That was when my hair was longer, and she kept telling me how much I looked like Jesus, which I'm not sure if that helped my Bible class or not. But a good class with them, very, very enthusiastic. Just again, a reminder that there's always people who are just looking for more knowledge. And that was kind of them. They just wanted to know more. A lot of people were in town for the camp. So again, Jersey camp, you might remember. This is Jennifer, right? You might recognize her. These are her parents. We got two Venezuelan kids, which, if you know about the situation in Venezuela right now, not super great. So there's a lot of Venezuelans in Colombia, and a lot of, begging for change and things like that. So there's been a huge influx of Venezuelans. They actually don't live in Venezuela anymore. I forget where they live now, but Panama. They moved to Panama. But then they came to the camp, which is cool. And so you see this camp is a little bit, more generous in age. It's from 10 to like 30, basically, to get, these kind of situations are much less common for them, and so young adult, they're really pushing kind of for young people, really up to 30. This is David here, who I mentioned before. So I stayed with him the majority of this second trip. That was really cool. So then we do our bus ride to camp. I was looking forward to that. It's a long bus ride. It took us about 3 hours to get out of Bogota, right? Because we were picking up people and things, and it was just, and traffic there is pretty bad. The infrastructure is not great. And so it took us forever just to get out of the city. We're supposed to be there in 3 hours, and again, we weren't out of the city for 3 hours. So we didn't get there until 5 o'clock in the morning. And we had to wake up at like 7 o'clock in the morning. So we were all in a very good mood. But you can see some of the young guys here got to meet and hang out with. So this is a cool place to have a camp. Right? It's not bad. I'm just a couple of hours out of the city, and you just get lots of mountains and pretty things and stuff. When I was there, I did 4 lessons. The theme was excellence, which again is another very generic theme. We need excellent wisdom to be excellent people. Talk about God's excellent standard. Talk about the excellence of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, my personal favorite. They asked me to preach about how excellent dating leads to excellent marriage. So again, this is still back in 2018, so I clearly had lots of experience on excellent dating. But it was a fun class to give regardless. Fortunately, I did have a girlfriend at that point. So, a lot of games and hanging out and fun. We did soccer and things like that. It was cool. You can't see these pictures really great, but just some of the kids from camp, and they're all cute. She was at Jersey camp, too, if you don't recognize her. One thing about camp, I mentioned how these countries you get lots of good juice. Sometimes you get bad juice. if the juice ever smells a little bit like it's fermented, you probably shouldn't drink it. So everybody got sick. I came back. This is my first time in any of these countries. All this traveling, I'd never gotten sick. Well, actually, it was one day I got pretty, not great. But not like nothing like crazy. But I had the magical juice there and came back not feeling great. First time I was there, I was almost very legitimately sick. And so the bus ride home was pretty unpleasant. And the worst thing, though, when you get back and you think you're going to get some water and you're going to get comfortable and stuff like that, Colombians don't drink water. They drink sugar. Actually, there is a thing they drink. It's literally drinking sugar. They call it tea, but it's just melted cubes of sugar that you drink with water. And they kept giving me that stuff. I'm like, I can't have any more sugar, man. I'm sick. Give me some water. And I had to, beg them. They finally give me a little botellita of the agua. And, so just keep that in mind. You might have to buy your own water if you want. Got a big group of kids. I think we got some Jersey camp kids here. Y'all might know Daniel. He's at FC right now. His brother, Santiago. She came to camp one year, too. He did, too. Poor kids. This is the camp director. We actually visited a congregation where he preaches that Sunday morning. Orlando did a lesson, I did a lesson. That was nice. Got back to Bogota, and we studied with this individual. This is a contact that Brother David was studying with. This guy was a lot of fun. He actually ran una cancha, which is a little indoor soccer field that you'll rent. So that was where he worked. And he was actually studying and preparing to be some form of pastor in either evangelical or Pentecostal church, but kind of studied himself out of it. As he was getting ready to do all this and kept studying, he kept realizing, I don't know if I want to be a part of a church that I can tell is not really, right and doing the right thing. And so at some point, he got in contact with Brother David. And David was talking to him a lot about baptism. He's really close to that. So I sat down with him. I said, "What do you want to talk about?" And he asked me to talk to him about musical instruments and why does that matter? And so we did that. We did the example from David and the ark and stuff like that. Talked about the principles behind authority and so forth. And so that was just kind of a cool opportunity. So we just wanted to hear the reasoning behind that doctrinal choice. And so he was supposed to be getting baptized, pretty soon after I had left. I'm not sure if he ever did, because I kept checking back, and I think he was delaying, but keep him in your prayers. Visit another church in South Bogota. This young lady here visited. Apparently she had used to go there and then stopped coming, and she kind of came in, and David talked to her a lot and convinced her to be baptized that night. And then he got me to baptize her. So. And they gave me special baptismal garments to baptize people with, so I'm looking very on fleek, as they say. Went back to Sopola again. We've already seen that picture. And then flew back home. Couple takeaways, and I'll open it up for questions. One is the whole, So we have a brother, Daniel Mantilla, who's a member of our congregation. He's actually Colombian, so he's talked a lot about just the culture of churches in Colombia, you know, for him growing up. And the idea of kind of typical, you know, doctrine that is taught in so-called churches of Christ, that's a little bit newer in this country. And so it's still a little bit more, it's not, they're not set up like denominations, but still a little bit heavy emphasizing on convincing people to be a part of the right church, a little bit more than being a part of Jesus. And that's really used to be a lot of my mentality, and I think I've grown away from that some. But when I went back and did this trip, or these two trips, it reminded me why that mindset is so appealing. Because it's a lot easier to get people to join into a group, because once they're in the group, then they've committed to accept whatever the group decides. And that's so clean and cookie cutter and easier. And that's what makes it so tempting. And I really felt that when I was there, just because in New York, nothing's cookie cutter. Everything's a big hot mess, and nobody knows anything about anything. All these different ideas, and people are coming to your church, and you don't know all different kinds of things they're believing. And so it reminded me why it is so appealing to want to emphasize this group mentality. You need to be part of this church, this type of church, and just figure out what we believe, and you'll accept all that as time goes by. But just that we can't do that, we can't emphasize that, that can't be how we draw people to Jesus. But even though that is kind of the mentality that is down there, a lot of the evangelists I was working with, we're still much more attentive to convince people to be more Jesus-focused rather than group-focused. So I think there is a shift there in that, which is, I think, a good thing. Other couple of takeaways is just, it's a pretty big blessing to be able to speak another language and just be able to go other places and do this kind of thing. It took me about 14 years of exposure and then some serious, you know, immersion study for 2 months. But, you know, the Lord brought me to a place where my, you know, staggered Spanish is sufficient to be able to teach and preach and mostly get by. And be able to travel on my own, and that's a very rewarding thing. Obviously, these trips have helped me with my Spanish, helped me be motivated to keep learning Spanish, and so I come home, and it's much easier for me to keep using it. Granted, I go to a bilingual church, there's a lot more opportunity for that, so that helps. But that's just been really nice. It's been really good to be able to do that. You need to dedicate a significant amount of time and effort to get to a place where it's worth it, because you could be like, because the difference between like, you know, knowing as much Spanish as my dad does and then being like decent, it almost doesn't make a difference, because you can't really do anything with it anyways, right? So all that effort, and then you finally get where you're like capable. It takes a lot of effort to get there. So before that, it's like, it's cute, but how useful is it? But eventually you cross a threshold where it's not just cute that you can say some words in another language. You can actually use it. And now that you can actually use it, you are using it, and it just helps you keep going with that. And so if you want to do it, just understand, like, you don't accidentally learn a foreign language. But if I can do it, then you probably can too. So. I don't know if you guys have any questions or thoughts on anything about Colombia or the churches there, or anything about Latin American countries or these kinds of trips.
I was going to ask about the necessity of learning Spanish. You covered that pretty well there. But it takes someone with you to maybe generate interest in perhaps going there in the future. How much Spanish would they need to be able to make an initial trip? Would there be enough brethren that speak English well enough that they could have some kind of basic communication and learn a little bit about what's going on?
Sure. The more affluent the country or the city, the better off you're going to be with that. The Osorio family that I stayed with, probably pretty bilingual, and so that would have helped a lot. If you're going on a preacher trip and you're accompanying other guys who are doing things, if you don't know much, but you got the time and the money, just do it. Simply being there will be great for you. It'll be nice for everybody else. Another, you know, visitor is always fun and good. And it just helps you be much more prepared to be able to do something like that on your own. Actually, but let me say another point about Spanish. So when you think about, okay, I got to learn a foreign language so I can go to a foreign country and teach there, right? So I got to learn Spanish so I can go to a foreign country and teach Spanish. Is that really the most pressing reason for us to learn Spanish, so we go to a Spanish-speaking country and preach there? Do you know where we really need Spanish preachers?
Yes.
Is in the U.S. Because in Spanish-speaking countries, you know what you can find? Spanish-speaking preachers. You know what you can't find here, hardly? Man, there's so much opportunity in the Hispanic community. So many Hispanics. I mean, a good example is the Embry Hills Church. That's a very big church. A lot of people want the resources. But how many Spanish-speaking Bible teachers do they have? Yeah, two. And you got how many members?
One.
One and a half. Wait, what? I said one.
One and a half.
One and a half Spanish things. You got like 500 members? How many elders? 48 elders, right? So if you got all that, and there's still such a deficit for it in Atlanta, where there's again a large Spanish-speaking population. So that's what struck me. I was talking to this one guy from Alabama, and he says, man, we need to get a... You know, any Spanish-speaking preachers who can come here, because we got a bunch of these Hispanics here. We need to start a church for that. I'm like, okay, in Alabama, all right, that means everybody needs Spanish. Anyways, so I would highly recommend learning Spanish and doing these trips to benefit this country. Because, again, you go down there, there's a lot of Spanish-speaking preachers. There's a lot of churches. You know, we think, oh, we're the Americans, and we're cool, and we're going to go down there, we're going to help them out. And then you figure out there's a billion churches, and they're all... You know, they're all getting by, and you're kind of like, well, this is nice, I like the food, but what am I doing here, really? And you have to come back home, and then that's really where there's a great need for Spanish right now, so. But then this kind of stuff, motivation, gives you a goal to work for, rewards you for your hard work, and it makes you more useful for being here.
Being with, like, the young people down there, doing, like, the camps and stuff, what are things like down there? Are there lots of young people? Did they get opportunities like we're having here? What were you able to pick up on that?
Sure. So as far as Bogota, the young people were very similar to young people in the States. Very similar situation, same kinds of issues and temptations and problems. You know, issues with homosexuality, like all that social stuff, you know, and the pressures there. That's just as big a deal down there as here. So you'll, and again, it feels a lot like here. There'll be some congregations that are a lot bigger, and then they'll have like a nice little group. But then other scattered churches where you have one or two kids. Very few places are as blessed as the States in these kinds of opportunities. And in fact, camps like this is relatively new for this country as well. So this camp, again, I hadn't done it for a long time. This is the first camp they've done in a while. It was a three-day camp. And so it was a pretty big deal. And Guatemala, actually, because of the Nunn where they did they did a kids' camp. A year or two ago, right?
Yeah,
a
few times at least.
Okay, cool. So stuff is happening, but again, not nearly as often or as... You know, we're pretty spoiled here. You know, I used to be excited about going to camp. Now I'm like, it's okay, most of them. So... Answer your question? Other questions? Yeah, so one thing I picked up on is Americans are more likely to go to Colombia than other places. And I kind of felt bad about that. Again, it's a little bit nicer. And I think there is a temptation where we kind of keep going back to the same places. You know, people who've been there, and so you go there too, or you know that's a little bit nicer, a little bit more affluent, so you go back there. So there are a lot of Americans in and out of there. And trying to remember specifically, but even with the churches, you kind of get the impression that like a big church like El Barrio Rincón, like, wow, they get a lot of people come, but these other churches, not so much. And I don't know if I would use the word jealousy, but you do get the idea there's people who feel like they're missing out a little bit. So that's another thing to kind of consider in your trips is, you know, going where, places where there are people you don't get as much attention, are going to get that. Trip to Nicaragua, I went with Josh Reeves and the thing. Specifically, what they did was to visit a lot of churches they knew got less attention, so that helped. Who's this guy here? There's, yeah, this is, like, Gary Fisher's lost brother, right? Tol Burke, I think it's his name. And so he's very fluent in Spanish. He lives in Tennessee right now, but he's makes a lot of trips to Colombia. Answer your question?
Tim, where was that picture taken?
Yeah, just a restaurant in Bogota. So.
Just to correct one thing, Alex, how old are you? Doug Lockmiller, how old are you?
27.
There we go.
We have a pretty broad.